Hello, everyone, and welcome to Heard on the Street, Street Fights podcast, where we uncover the stories behind the companies and, more importantly, the people that constitute this sector of media and advertising that we all call local. So where are they from? What makes them tick? What business and life lessons can we draw from that? So I'm Mike Boland, lead analyst at Street Fight, and our guest today is Randy Parker, founder and CEO of Brevi. But before that, he held many positions and roles in a long career, including founder of Constant Contact and many other positions. So we talked to Randy from our studio in San Francisco about that journey and what he's learned from it and what we can take away from it. So here's our episode. I'm Mike Boland, lead analyst at Street Fight, and more importantly, our guest today is Randy Parker, who is founder and CEO of Brevi. So Randy, welcome to the program.
It's great to be here, Mike. I'm glad to be on Heard on the Street.
Great. So we have a lot to talk about, including the milestones and learnings from your flight path in the local space. But before we do that, let's start with the present. So tell us a little bit about Brevi and your role for those unfamiliar.
Yeah, Brevi really is the next, you know, incarnation of trying to solve the small business marketing challenge. It's what I've been tasked with for 20 plus years, and we realized there's a need for the first data-driven marketing autopilot for these smaller businesses, where we dig in directly to their data and use that to generate marketing recommendations.
That's great. And I there's a lot of kind of confluence of many different kind of trends that we're tracking at Street Fight that really taps into everything from, you know, AI, machine learning, and also just kind of like SaaS-based kind of service for small businesses and a software product, which is actually something that goes very much back to a lot of the things you've done in your career. So let's actually start there. I want to find out more about Brevi in a deeper discussion. We're going to circle back to that. But first, as we like to do on the show, we're going to hit rewind and kind of unpack the career path that got you to this point. And you've worn many hats as an entrepreneur, and one that's perhaps best known is founding a household name company and a product that I use, which is Constant Contact. So let's start there. What were the drivers, the inceptions, kind of the founding principles? Walk us through the founding story.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it's really a story of sort of a progressive narrowing, right? Mm-hmm. So it just started with literally the first days of the web. And I was somebody, you know, lucky to grow up as a kid since 77, I've been online. So by the time the web comes around, through CompuServe, Source, all those early online services, MIT, which led the development of ARPANET, Internet, once you see this thing called the web, you're like, boom, there's going to be lots of opportunity here. So I really started it without any precise narrowing. I wish I could tell you we saw, you know, leading small businesses, email marketing day one, but it really started with this idea. Coming from my background as an artificial intelligence researcher, that if we get sort of the smarts of the machine helping to mediate that huge information path, there's got to be something there.
Yeah.
And so we sort of had some fits and starts where we were not necessarily aligned with revenue production, shall we say, but it came down to figuring out, okay, who needed it the most? It was going to be these smaller businesses. And I grew up third generation small business entrepreneur. So I never knew a world of big companies. I just knew, you know, folks gutting it out in a small business. So you see the web, you say huge potential, but they're never going to do it themselves. So eventually we figured out the only place, and this is really true today, but the only place to get small business attention is to get between them and their customer.
Yep.
Everything else is kind of a nice to have. You can bring them, I always say, you can bring a small business a machine that you put a dollar in and it gives you $1.05 back, and they'll say, well, great, leave me some literature on that. I'll look at that tomorrow.
Right.
But if you're between something that they've got to do today with a customer, then you can get their attention. And we figured out all of this funky use of the web and email could be around that relationship with the customer. And that's where we got deep into email marketing and the product you know.
Yeah, now that's interesting in that, like, you kind of had a perfect storm of knowledge, or I should probably say perspective, in terms of the realities of the way small businesses operate and the way they think. I think a lot of people in the local space come at it opportunistically from probably a software background or a business background and say, like, oh, small businesses would love this. But as we know, small businesses defy logic, just as you just characterized. So that kind of reality check of, this is the way small businesses think, I think is great. But also, one point, you went to MIT, correct?
Yes, that's right.
So what is your background in terms of, like, you've probably picked up a lot of great, like, business knowledge through your career path as an entrepreneur. What is the extent of your technical background in terms of that overall kind of skill set?
Yeah, so I mean, I went there for computer science, to study artificial intelligence in particular. I like to say I've only had one job since I was 11, which is working on software. So, luckily, that's what's eating the world, as
As Mark
Andreessen says.
Andreessen said,
But there's not really anything else. People come to me all the time and say, "Hey, would you love to do some biotech genome thing?" I'm like, I just don't have that that play in me. So, that was advantageous, and MIT is a very entrepreneurial place. I mean, there are tons of spin-offs. So, in some ways, it was the right place. As I mentioned, we've been working on email. Email was just this free thing that, existed everywhere. And it's such a simple protocol from a technical standpoint that we really just had to layer things onto it to kind of make it, to add this value, right? These things like tracking whether somebody opens an email. Well, that's not natively there, but, all that just sort of got grafted on.
Now it's also interesting. Email, it's amazing how well it's sustained as a marketing product, as something that we all use. And I mean, all of these other kind of tech advancements come, and email is still there. If you just look at the numbers in terms of local advertising spending, or not just local, even branding, all of these different categories of ad spending, email has sustained. Ironically, so has direct mail, but email is certainly something that is really just captures a kind of key moment in getting someone's attention, whether it be their morning read or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, no question. I don't think anybody would have sat there in the mid-90s and said, "Yeah, this is going to be still a dominant small business spend 25 years from now," right? People would have thought, "Oh, there'll be some, holographic, marketing technique we use." But it is. It's just worked out that it's the right price. It's got the right amount of power in it, and it's evolved.
So let's move on. After Constant Contact, tell us where you landed next, and then they kind of like abridged discography, for lack of a better term, of the kind of companies and career paths from then till now. And then I kind of want to go back and kind of talk more about some of the experiences and lessons, but first kind of lay that framework for us.
Yeah, I mean, my background, actually more specifically than just being in software, was really in software consulting. I like a challenge, so consulting was always a great way to not get bored in an area. But I also was able to continue what had started probably 90 or 91, working in small business specifically. After I left Constant Contact, I went and worked on a pretty big project at Intuit, which really was about how to build a small business operating system, right? We've talked about this in this industry for so long. They ultimately did not take the big cut at it that we were advocating then, but they've come back around to that. And you see today, they actually derive quite a bit of revenue from that. Worked with companies like IBM, which were really interesting because, as you well know, an IBM looks at small business as sort of being, 100 to 500 employees is small business to them. And it's a lot different than the Constant Contacts and the Intuits, where we look at,
The VSBs.
0 to 5, 0 to 10, absolutely the VSB segment. So, but you learn something looking at each slices of this world. And there have been advising companies, invested in some. And then I think I probably met you 4 or 5 years ago when we did PagePart, which was an attempt to say there's this challenge of the small business moving to mobile and keeping that presence out front, presence being one of those core layers, right? That you and others always put in those diagrams of how does a small business sort of build its stack. We ultimately, were not successful there in terms of We had a free instant way of generating mobile presence, but up against, you know, the Wixes of the world, that was a tough road. But through that, we worked with Facebook, and that's how that became the genesis then of Brevi.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting with the concept of presence, particularly mobile presence. I think Facebook and Google decided to start paying attention to that. And one thing that Facebook has been outwardly advertising to small businesses is that your Facebook presence is your mobile presence because it is, you know, optimized for that screen. Same with Google, with things such as accelerated mobile pages and other things where it's really just trying to migrate all of the presence online to mobile. So pure plays in that space probably got squeezed a bit. Now, calibrating kind of the patterns from all of the kind of places you've been and roles that you have taken on, what are some of the kind of, I don't know, commonalities or universal truths that you've seen in different startups, or I guess common challenges that you've faced as a founder, early stage challenges, growth and scaling challenges, those types of things? And what are your, I don't know, points of advice for folks that are kind of in that position now?
Yeah, well, I'd say, you know, one thing you learn early on is you really have to be laser focused on, you know, that path to the wallet, as I call it. I mean, figuring out, you know, who's paying for what, how are they paying? You need to make it easy for them to pay. And that really even beyond small business world. I mean, there are lots of enterprise companies that offer great software products, but they don't figure out how to make that flow, right? They might have, you know, the person who's using the software is different than who's buying it, and they don't connect those. I think when you look at the successes, mostly in tech, since that's my background, you find people who not only just solve a pain, but figure out that that wallet path. And then more particularly in a small and local realm, for me, the biggest thing is attention. Like, you've got to figure out how to get that attention and engagement of this smaller entity, because there's no substitute for that. Again, yeah. You can be making them, you can be printing money for them, but if they aren't aware of you, feel you're critical and engage with you, it's really tough to monetize that and sustain it.
Yeah. I think few people recognize that one thing that is such a currency for small businesses, besides actual currency and cash, you know, they do have cash flow challenges, but time. You know, the time, the scarcity of time for, and you kind of layer into there all of the different kind of options they have. And it's kind of like the paradox of choice that they're then faced with. So that's, I think that's a very good point. So we're going to pause there for a commercial break. But when we come back, more with Randy Parker. Hi, everyone. It's Mike Boland here, lead analyst at Street Fight, and I want to tell you about the Street Fight Summit, Street Fight's flagship event, and it's coming up fast. So it's going to be June 5th and 6th, and we're going to be back in Brooklyn this year, and it'll have all the trappings of a Street Fight conference, including networking with top influencers in the local media and advertising community, lots of social events in and around the show, and of course, a stellar program that's really coming together, including speakers from Google and Facebook and Microsoft and IBM Watson and several others. So you can find out more at streetfightmag.com.
Welcome back, everyone. My guest is Randy Parker. And before the break, we were talking about Randy's career path and some of the kind of lessons. So I'd like to pick things up there and go a bit deeper. So Randy, we were talking about some of those early stage challenges, some of the kind of product challenges and the things that are endemic to serving small businesses and some of those lessons. Organizationally speaking, or I guess kind of early stage strategy speaking, I want to talk a little bit about venture funding and kind of like maybe through the lens of what you did at Constant Contact or pick any other example. And really, I think, you know, there's arguably an over-reliance or maybe even just a glorification of venture funding today. It's almost like a rite of passage or something that just seems to kind of fit into that Silicon Valley culture of people's own kind of sense of self-worth, you know, instead of the practical thing that it actually should be. And I think a few people talk about the downfalls of institutional money in some cases. If you take too much, there's dilution, there's setting a high bar for valuation and expectations, especially in later rounds. So what's your kind of overall thoughts on those pitfalls?
Yeah, certainly. I think there are a couple of things. I mean, one is And I think you hit it on the head. You know, sometimes it's seen as almost as like a founder self-worth vanity sort of thing. But one thing is certainly one of the great things you have with a startup when you're in that gritty, you know, bootstrap, working out of the attic kind of era is that you're laser focused.
Yeah.
I mean, there is really minimal excess. And I know from a number of things I've been involved with in the past, when you raise a bunch of money, you can all of a sudden think you've got a lot of relief. You've got a lot of extra running room. And I'll just tell you, I mean, there was one point after we raised, I think it was probably after we raised, might have been a $5 million round, I think, you know, at Constant Contact, we thought that we could build a whole CRM system. You know, a lot of people were kind of using their email product and the list segments as a sort of mini CRM. So we said, well, great, we've got money. We'll just build a CRM. And after about 9 months or a year, we had to kill that. And we realized that was just a total money sink. But, you know, and honestly, we would have ended up, you know, thinking we were Salesforce.com as well. And so I think that's the biggest thing is you lose that focus.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I think founders don't realize sometimes is what you lose with all the levels of capital and even with which venture firms you choose to work with, you close certain doors, you lose certain optionality about the path of the company.
Yeah. Certain exits you've priced yourself out of.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, people forget if you're taking money from a $300 million fund, there's going to be a certain amount they want to put in, and there's not going to be that, you know,
$30 million exit.
$30, $40 million exit that might come along. And I think particularly these days, we're seeing a lot of roll-ups. Obviously, the public market looks different than it did, you know, 15, 20 years ago, even 5 to 8 years ago. You've got to be thinking about, okay, you know, what's the ecosystem I'm fitting into and fund accordingly.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think you're right about the, you know, you use the word focus. I'll use another F word, which is fear. Not too much fear, but just the right amount of fear in that kind of early stage that doesn't force kind of exuberant spending. And it just forces a way of thinking that is like, it's like people that lived through the Depression. And, you know, maybe a little bit too much of that is bad, but just the right measure is probably good. The other metaphor I love is that institutional funding is, or particularly early stage VC funding, is rocket fuel. And rocket fuel is great if you're building a rocket. Maybe you want to build a nice plane, or maybe you want to build a nice house that operates on natural gas. And in those cases, rocket fuel will blow it up. So it's, you know, it's great, but not in all cases.
Yeah, I like that fuel example. Exactly. Yeah, if you're getting on a scooter, you do not want a solid rocket booster behind you.
Yeah, exactly. So, let's move on to kind of other things that you've learned. One topic I think that's top of mind today for a lot of people is culture. And, you know, there's a lot of talk of, you know, culture is very important, no doubt. But cultural uniformity is probably the question. There's kind of terms being thrown around like cultural fit. But also, I think a move towards more diversity today, and not diversity in gender diversity and ethnic diversity necessarily, but also diversity of ideas and personalities and backgrounds. So what are those kind of trade-offs, and what have you seen in your career in terms of the sweet spot of, you know, culture and kind of uniformity, people thinking the same, but then also a fair amount of pushback and diversity of ideas and cross-training and all that good stuff?
Yeah, it's certainly a big issue, and certainly, you know, very timely given how much it impacts everything we're seeing now with people in companies and how people are treated. I think it's really important right now for founders in particular to make sure they aren't just getting locked into, oh, here's all my friends from Princeton. I've sort of got this core network. I remember talking to a funder a few years ago and was just looking at backing teams of people from different fraternities because they felt like, okay, you know, they already know how to work together. They've spent 4 years in the trenches. And while there's something great about that, I think they were missing as much now. And so I know I'm personally trying to be super aware of that in terms of, you know, trying to get outside of your comfort. Who are the people you aren't talking to? Who are the people that are in those spaces? Even looking at resumes right now, it's just, you know, try and make sure that you don't, you know, move this one to the no pile on just some preconceived notion. You need to kind of challenge yourself.
Yeah, that's interesting. So let's kind of go back to the present. So let's talk about Brevi. You know, I want to hear about some of the exciting things you're working on. You mentioned some of the kind of the brief descriptions of the company earlier, but tell us a little bit more about kind of the founding principles, the thesis of Brevi, similar to what you did, you know, explained about Constant Contact.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the thesis is somewhat along the same lines, but very different in some other ways as Constant Contact. The core thesis is there's still so much opportunity and so much pain and struggle for the small business, right? In many ways, what we had 20 years ago was this fairly linear marketing challenge. You know, I just need to get out in front of a customer, get a message, bring them back. And now we're living in this, it's almost like going from checkers to 3D chess, right? You've got to be doing social, you've got to be mobile, you've got to be very real time in how you're responding to people. The expectations of customer service are 10x. You're in a world that is dominated by the Amazons and the big chains who can spend on all of these things at a scale where they get incredible economies. So when you look at the landscape for a small business, you just say, my gosh, they are not going to get out of this alive without a bunch of help. So that was that's sort of the opportunity. And then we said, how can we tackle that? And we realized is we're quickly moving past that point where we can depend on just heads and hands help from an agency or a consultant to get it done. Those are expensive. As the world gets more complex, those aren't as capable.
Yep.
And so if you look at a world of making it automated, in order to automate something, you got to have data. So what we're building is a platform. We're plugged into the actual data, the customer data, the transaction data of that small business, and can use that to automate the marketing.
What, if you can talk about it, in terms of kind of product roadmap, or at least what you're working on now, are you kind of up to and most excited about from a kind of product perspective in the remainder of 2018?
Yeah. What we're talking about right now is we are working in the fitness segment and are providing automatic alerts, marketing recommendations, and insights that a small business maybe in some cases could get, but probably won't get on their own, but now in an automatic, intelligent fashion, kind of like lets you know what you can get done with 5 or 10 touches a day of marketing and hyper-focused, right? Who's the VIP customer that's at risk? Who's bought a product from me that now is lapsing? You know, where are the points that I can have the most leverage? Can you alert me when my marketing is falling down as compared to the previous 3 months? And essentially just give me a button to say, fix that. And it's going to take some time to reach the full vision. But the first step is just alerts and really just one thing you can do to get big bang for the buck.
Nice. And that brings back the time point. Now, I'm curious about the vertical focus because SMBs, they're, of course, very unique, but they're also so varied. That's one of the challenges about SMBs is that you just have so many sub-verticals and category headings and all that, and they all operate differently. Now, from your perspective, in terms of building intelligence around something that's automated, do you get to do that more effectively in a particular vertical, like a single vertical focus, at least the tip of the spear to start? Maybe you move into other verticals, but at least in terms of like customer behavior, frequency of the transaction, all of those just like litany of factors, does that kind of compel that just like vertical specific focus? And if so, why fitness?
Yeah, I think that's, you're reading ahead in the playbook. that's exactly it. I mean, you get an opportunity to do it well. And back to what we were talking about earlier about engagement, you're really going to capture their attention when you're talking about their deep vertical. You're talking about their type of client, their type of product. And then we believe we'll be able to extrapolate very well. And, you know, and people are just starting to build those more horizontal platforms that we think will be a great plug-in. But right now, the early adoption of a full move to the cloud for small business has been on these very vertical kind of line of business systems, right, that you just run your business in. We've seen it in fitness, in real estate, in food beverage, right, you can retail. And so we think starting there in order to get the attention and the ability to execute well is vertical was the way to go.
Great. So we're going to go to a break pretty soon. But before we do that, I want to hear about Boston. You know, you were like a Boston guy. Everyone knows you as the Boston guy. You went to MIT. You've been there for years. And you know, few people remember that you know, that kind of area, the kind of Route 128 tech corridor, you know, predates Silicon Valley. And it's a soft spot in my heart. I was born in Worcester. So what have you found to be kind of the pros and cons of like that region as a tech region, as like, you know, a place to live with a family, all that stuff?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, Boston's great. And you're absolutely right. I mean, people forget, you know, the first venture capitalists started here. I think it was in the 60s. I've got investors that have been investing, I think, 40 plus years, a couple of them. So there is a great depth here. Now, one of the things that sometimes happens is you know, it gets a little stuck in that. I often say, you know, you really want to do something exciting. Sometimes you got to take it out to the valley where they'll take a flyer on anything. But yeah, people forget. I mean, we had an AI bubble in the late 80s here that made what came later with the first internet bubble really look like a rerun. We had all the same things, companies overfunded, people buying $2,000 chairs for their office, and huge blowups. You know, all the drama that made it into the tech pubs, 98, 99, we had all that back in the mid 80s. So it's a neat area. And obviously, it's got great universities. And, you know, growing up here, it's just a place that has a deep history. So it's a great place to start a company.
That's great. So we're going to pause there for a commercial break. And when we come back, more from Randy Parker, and we're going to have a fun little lightning round.
Hi everyone, it's Mike Bolin, lead analyst at Street Fight, and I'm here today to tell you about Artillery, which is a new publication and intelligence firm that's focused on VR and AR. Mobile AR, for example, has a large installed base of smartphones and real business models that are materializing around things like influencing local commerce. So we recommend that you go check out the site and its thought leadership of these key topics. And while you're there, you can sign up for the free Artillery Weekly newsletter. So head on over to artillery.co, that's Artillery without an E, and learn about some of the visually immersive technologies that could transform local commerce.
Welcome back, everyone. My guest is Randy Parker. And before the break, we were talking about all the things that Randy is doing at Brevi. And what we're going to do now is a little lightning round. We're going to go through some just kind of quick hit questions that dive deeper into Randy's brain and some of the kind of fun things that he likes to do in his spare time and the, you know, things like that. So, Randy, let's get started. So what is something about you that few people know about?
Something about me. Well, one is that I'm a Buddhist that grew up in the hedonism capital of South Florida. So talk about a contradiction in terms.
Wow. If this weren't a lightning round, I'd love to kind of dig more into that. But so moving on. So what's the company or tech startup that could be historic, could be existing, that you think it would be most exciting to be part of at the moment of inception? So like the meeting of Larry and Sergey, or the HP garage, or like the homebrew computer club with Woz and Jobs, or just like just from your kind of personal kind of geeking out, what part, where would you love to be in tech history just to kind of be a fly on the wall or be a part of it?
Yeah, I think for me, it's got to be Netscape, where they just saw this really simple protocol, but the aha went on of like, we can put the entire world's information here.
Yep, absolutely. And that's like Jim Clark and Mark Andreessen, who has just like, you quoted him earlier, and also just his, I don't know, his ongoing sustainability and acumen. He continues to prove himself as just like the guy that sees the future.
Yeah, no question.
So what is your favorite tech product or app that you use as a consumer?
Yeah, I mean, other than the obvious, which is, you know, an iPhone, which we'll probably all be, you'll be on iPhone 42 and still be talking about it. But lately, I've just been really impressed with YouTube TV, which is their, you know, over the web TV service. I mean, it just smokes everything else. Mm-hmm. And in terms of quality, you know, they've delivered a few trillion, whatever it is, hours of video. So they kind of know what they're doing. So we're just loving that. Everybody's on every device known to mankind here. Yeah.
I'm a proud cord cutter since 2009. So who is someone from the business world, and that could be alive or dead, that you admire most and why?
Yeah, for me, and you know, some of this is my living and dying in small business forever, but Scott Cook of Intuit.
Yep.
And I've emailed with him, but never sat down and had sort of a discussion with him. But the way from day one, he really invented what we all know as customer-driven development, you know, the whole follow me home. Love to just dig into that.
Awesome. Who is the person in any industry? So it could be musician, movie stars, whatever, alive or dead. And actually, I'm including like fictional characters in that if you want, that you'd most want to have like a dinner or a drink with and just hang out with.
Yeah, I'd say it's probably a split between Jeff Bezos and just that focus at Amazon and Joe Strummer, who, you know, upper class diplomat's kid who ended up being a voice of punks and the downtrodden.
Awesome.
Just two interesting people, yeah.
Yeah. So what are some passions or hobbies that help you mentally unplug from work? I know you play soccer. You know, what are some of the things you like to do?
Yeah, soccer and tennis. I just a huge sports fan. Watch it, play it. Still run around with a bunch of 20-year-olds, so that keeps me very young, playing soccer with these young players.
At least you haven't gotten a blood boy yet. I don't know if you watch Silicon Valley, but
I watch a little bit. Haven't seen that.
It's a blood transfusion from like young virile men that like rich old Silicon Valley executives will reportedly kind of do on a weekly basis. So lastly, what are some of your personal goals for 2018? Not just with Brevi, but just kind of in your own life and in general.
Yeah, some is just to travel a little more. We were pretty busy setting things up last year, so I didn't really get much. So going to Argentina soon and do some other travel later this year. And then I'd say the other piece, we touched on a little bit earlier, but I'm really taking a look at how to connect with people outside of my normal sphere events, people outside of my demographic, people outside of my comfort zone, because I think it's so germane to everything we're facing in this country in terms of politics, race, economic opportunity. And so just really trying to find those spaces to get out from the norm.
That's awesome. I think that's a great place to end it. So that's all the time we have. I want to thank you, Randy, for spending some time with us.
Thank you for having me, Mike. This has been a great fun.
Yeah. Thank you all for listening and stay tuned for future episodes of Heard on the Street. You can find us on streetfightmag.com. You can also subscribe on Apple Podcasts and please feel free to give us a review while you're there. Also stay tuned for a lot more writings and multimedia from Street Fight. And don't forget that Street Fight Summit's coming up quickly. We'll be in Brooklyn again this year, June 5th and 6th. And the program's really coming together. Excuse me, we have Google, Facebook, Microsoft, IBM Watson, and many others. And you can find out more about that on streetfightmag.com. So this has been Heard on the Street. I'm Mike Boland. Thanks for listening.